This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
It's that time, Miz. It's that time.
It's time.
It's August, yeah. Which means today is report day for the Michigan football team. Tonight we have, I mean, it's really not significant, but there's a preseason football game tonight, so it's the start of football because we are now, as I said yesterday, July was the last month without football for a while, which is a great thing for so many of us. And that also means today on August 1st, on a Thursday, we bring back the fellows for the MGoBlog Roundtable, or most of the Roundtable. Ed will not be joining us today. We hope he can come back and join us soon. He's got a lot on his plate right now with podcasts and thepowerrank.com and some other stuff. But we have Brian Cook here. Good morning, Brian.
Morning.
We have Craig Ross here. He is the president of the Aiden Owens fan club.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to talk about that on a football day or not.
I think it's really cool. It won't take a long conversation. I think it's really cool for people that didn't see the news about Aiden Owens because he is one of the best athletes in all of intercollegiate athletics right now in the world.
Yeah. Aiden Owens is a transfer from USC. He's a biomedical engineering student, and he is number 16 right now in the world decathlon ratings, and he's number 3 all time in the highest score in a decathlon for a person under 20 years old. And he came specifically, I think this is great, to train with Jenny Ashcroft, who's going to be his primary coach in the decathlon. So he'll be fun to watch here at Michigan. He's a
elite athlete.
We know we don't talk much about track, but we have, I mean, I don't know if people haven't been into the new facility. It's wonderful.
Have you watched the banking actually happen?
Yeah.
When they raised the bank. Have you seen it, Brian?
So they have. I don't know what you're talking about.
So the indoor track is obviously not the same size as outdoor track, right. And it's because of the turn, you have more turns with running the distances and whatnot, right. It's harder on your knees. And so they have the corners are on hydraulics and it banks.
Like,
and so it raises
like NASCAR?
Up. Yeah. So it banks like that. So it's on angles. So it allows you to, it's better for your knees and it keeps the, I guess it's better for momentum or for running. There's a reason behind it. And it's unbelievable to watch when they raise it up. And the athletes absolutely love the bank track at the new facility here at U of M. It's phenomenal.
And the facility is phenomenal.
Yeah. The weight room, they have. This is for the rowers. This is for the weightlifter. For the throwers. This is for the runners. This is for this athlete. This is for that athlete. It's a phenomenal facility over there. Yeah. And I'm sure that is one of the things that drew Aiden in. So wanted to mention him because I didn't actually. It happened in the last couple of weeks, and I think I briefly mentioned him in an update, but hadn't actually talked too much about it. You mentioned him when you walked in. Yeah. I mean, he is. Right now, he walks in to be one of the top athletes on campus at Michigan, regardless of sport. Obviously, we're going to talk mainly football here this morning, but
I'm waiting for the, communist era from the 1950s punchline, where
it's odd that you said that because I was reading through a history of Rosa Luxemburg and Carl Liebknecht, who were lovers and were both murdered by the people in Germany and thrown into the canal in Berlin when they were supporting the
romantic, at least
it was sort of romantic. But yeah, I guess romantic in all senses, but they weren't very successful supporting a left-wing revolution, although they were supportive of the Weimar Republic.
Right,
but that's another story, I guess. No one wants to hear about that.
That Craig's back.
Yeah, we know Craig is in mid-season form. All right, guys, we're here to talk football, needless to say. Football camp opens up first day of campus tomorrow. For those that don't know the schedule, report day today, first day of fall campus tomorrow. They have two helmets and shorts practices, then two helmets and shoulder pads practices, and then it's the fifth practice of fall camp. And this is NCAA regulations. Fifth practice of fall camp is the first time you can go full pads. So if they stay on that they're going to do the first 5 days in a row, which I think they are, that the first off day would actually not be until next Wednesday, then they will be in full pads on Tuesday.
So don't believe anything you hear before Tuesday.
And that actually is, I'm glad you said it, because I kind of hinted at that earlier this morning. I said, the first week of fall camp, the I don't know if you want to call it significant, but I know you'll dig into it on your site. The first thing that'll be of interest is the updated roster.
Yes.
Right? So you'll see – freshman numbers, anybody that changed roster numbers, but even more so, it's about who
weights,
right?
And all weight gain is good.
All weight loss is good.
All weight loss is good, and staying the same is also good.
Yeah. So you know, how you read into it, I guess, depends on the player. So on Monday, I was it was Jim Harbaugh's golf outing, and I was moderating a conversation. And first, I had the offensive coaches, and then I had the defensive coaches. And when I mentioned to Sean Nua, I asked him to talk about Mozzie Smith, and he talked about Mozzie being down to like 315 or something like that, which is like 30 plus, it's like around 30 pounds or so more slender than he was when he arrived as an early enrollee. I have Don Brown sitting right next to me, and he's smiling. He's got this big bleep eating grin on his face, nodding his head. Yeah, he's down. He's in good shape. And you can tell the Ben Herbert program for the offseason, apparently, and we'll see what the numbers look like. I think you'll see Sean McCune is down a little bit of weight, but it's
that's good.
The other thing that you'll be happy to hear about with Sean McCune is he spent the entire offseason working on, I don't know if relearning is the word that was actually used, but working on the proper technique to always and using it always on catching the football, where not just having it out of his hands, but and not using the body, but you know, having it to come into you. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I think Sean McCune is going to be an interesting player for sure for Josh Gattis, because he he got a whole new offense dumped on him halfway through last season and kind of struggled with it for a bit. But when he made contact on those blocks against linebackers and safeties, those went very well. So for me, like, the catching is almost secondary for him, because he can be like a top level tight end blocker. And in this offense, if you get your blocks right and there's one error from the defense, then you might be
spring. Yeah, you could spring it. So
they don't have a tight end. I mean, beyond McCune,
well, they have Eubanks.
But I mean, they don't have. I mean, is he a blocker? I mean,
at this point in his career, he'll be there. Like, okay. he looks like a tight end now, which he didn't when he came in.
Right, as a primary blocking guy. Yeah, to have a McCune as your, if you want to call him, a sixth offensive lineman, and Ed Warner talked about this, and so did Sherrone Moore on Monday, where the tight ends work with the tackles a lot, and, you know, on their blocking techniques, and also in the fact that when you have a new right tackle, whoever it's going to be, you can use that tight end to help early on to ease in whoever the new starting right tackle is going to be. I mean, they talk about you're not going to use Eric Ahl in that situation.
Right. Eric Ahl is thin.
He's a flex guy.
Eric Ahl is a wide receiver.
Yeah, he's a tall slot.
Let's just skip the Funchess phase where he's like blocking and it's not going that well. Just like, he's 6'4", he's got a 4.2 shuttle. He can be a wide receiver.
Yeah, let him block on the outside. That's fine. Just don't inline block him with end of line block him with against an end or a linebacker.
Have you heard noise about the other tight ends, either Schoonmaker or Mustafa Muhammad? Are they?
I haven't heard anything about either guy.
Yeah, I haven't.
Mustafa's name was mentioned by Sherrone. He sounds like he's that number three guy, and he will be pushing. He just right now for both of those guys and for Eric Ahl for that matter, they just have two guys ahead of him that are going to play a lot.
And Schoonmaker was always going to be like a comeback in 2 or 3 years and see what you've got, because he was played small school New England football.
Right.
I think he was the quarterback, right? There's a transition there.
Yeah, so and to me, we jumped in into tight end was the jumping off point.
Well,
the real jumping off point is generally, to me, would be... So funny you say that.
No.
It's funny that he said that. So I asked Jay the question, and he actually deferred it to Josh Gattis, and I said, so what is the role of the fullback in this offense? And Josh Gattis basically said... He didn't say we don't have a fullback, but he said we don't call it a full. Like, they will not call it. They don't have like a fullback set per se.
Are they a super back now?
They'll run two back sets, and if they're running two back sets, both guys can be called upon to do the same things, and so they can carry the ball, they can block, they can catch. Like, they're going to be called upon. There will be obviously times where you're going to have a specific guy as your second of the two backs because you may want him as the lead blocker, but the threat is there that whoever's back there, it could be. So you could put two tailbacks, traditional tailbacks, next to each other. You could have on either side of the quarterback. You could have a tailback on one side and someone that we would refer to as a fullback.
Okay.
But he's just a second back, and they will not call him a fullback, and they don't want it to be that way.
That's just terminology.
Correct. And it's the usage of that position outside of traditional short yardage and goal line stuff. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of fullback at all. Based on what Josh Gattis said. I mean, there will be two back sets, but...
That's my guess, too. I think they're going to want a slot/ running back in the lineup a lot.
So I've taken to calling it the spread H.
Spread H,
spread H back is going to get 5 carries a game. He's going to motion in and out of the backfield, and he's going to operate this. And he's going to run a 4-3.
So, Mikey Sainristal, or...
I know that he came through spring with all the hype, but I really want to see what Giles Jackson... Because Giles Jackson played running back as a junior, played wide receiver as a senior. You know, he's 5'9", he's 180 pounds, but he ran a 4.4 at the opening. He ran a 3.8 shuttle, which is bonkers. It's so good that I feel like obviously they must have done something to the electronic timing to make it...
To screw it up.
To screw it up. Because it would have been the best number at the NFL Combine this year. So, and he had like a 35-inch vert. So like this is a guy who is stop-start, who can do that breast and stuff where, you know, you got your 7 yards and oops, now I got a touchdown. Like, he's really interesting to me, and I have no earthly idea why he signed up to play for Michigan. And now I do, because they have this, it makes total sense that he's on the roster. And previously it was just like, oh, this guy's gonna be McDoom, he's gonna be Norfleet.
No, he's not gonna be those guys. I hadn't really watched much of his tape until yesterday, actually, and he just popped. I mean,
fast twitch, right?
Yeah. Well, and
it's just one of those things where he's boxed in by three guys and then whoop gone.
Yeah. And he's stronger than you think. He has a little bit of Mike Hart in him, and he's a lot faster than Mike Hart.
I mean,
but he has a little bit of him, and he's being hit, or you can't really hit him. And he's playing, it looks like, against pretty good competition. I don't think he played for a pretty major
California school. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's exciting. But, you know, from what I've seen of Sainristal now, he didn't play against the strongest competition in Massachusetts. But he still looks good in his tape, and what we saw of him in the spring looks good. So they have two really terrific options in that.
It's kind of funny. We're working the opposite of how most people would start talking about an offensive team. As we're getting, you would start in the trenches, you'd go to the quarterback. We actually started with tight ends, fullbacks, and now the slots. But those are the three positions that are going to be the most uniquely different
than they were
last year. These are the biggest changes.
And a lot of things on offense I think we pretty much know about. We know that the wide receivers are going to be good. We know that Shea Patterson is going to be good, and he's actually going to be in an offense that is more suited for his abilities. And we know 4 of the 5 offensive line starters. So, you know, the kind of questions are on the periphery. And then there's the big question about, okay, now we have Josh Gattis. We have this modern Joe Moorhead offense. How is that going to go? But I think it's going to go just fine because, you know, for all the RPO stuff, the only thing it really changes anything for is the quarterback. Everybody else is just blocking or running a play. And it's the quarterback who has to make the decision and make the throw. And the thing about, you know, Shea Patterson is he did it in high school. He did that at Ole Miss. And he did it 3 times last year, and it worked all 3 times. So
We'll see a lot more of the RPO. I know Sharon on Monday talked about, he didn't get to a lot of the details of it, but he said that there are definitely differences in the routes for the tight ends. They're a lot, not, I don't say a lot different, but I don't know how a lot different a route for a tight end can be, but there are different routes and route trees and route combinations in this offense than we've seen in the past. I think some of that has to do straight up with the RPO stuff, because the RPOs, I guess for the most part, they're locked into certain passes because of how the plays are designed.
Yeah, I mean, you have
slots and bubbles and stuff.
You have to get it out quickly. But, you know, there are ways where you can spring big plays there. Just you have to break a tackle, which brings me back to Giles Jackson. So he'll be interesting. And then, of course, the right tackle battle where, you know, I think Sam mentioned a couple weeks ago that he was leaning Mayfield.
To say what Sam had said the other day, going into fall camp, it's like it was in spring ball. It is even, right? They got even reps. Stuber and Mayfield got even reps. And he said as they go through fall camp and it remains even, he thinks that they would lean towards the younger guy and the more athletic guy in Jalen Mayfield. If Stuber does something in fall camp, does things in fall camp to elevate himself to seize the job, he's going to win the job. But if the two guys kind of elevate each other together, Sam is pretty – I don't say it's like a gut feel or anything, but he's fairly confident. And I think it just makes sense, right? A guy that's a little more athletic, that has more upside, that's a little bit younger, that if there's a tie between two guys or it's really close between the two guys, that you go to the guy with the higher upside, the more athleticism, et cetera.
Well, the other thing is that I think Harbaugh said on his podcast that, we might move Runyon inside, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because you have 3 returning starters on the inside. But I think it speaks to how confident they are in that battle. And whoever comes out of that is probably going to be a major upgrade.
Well, you know,
I would say that's the case.
You know, I'm still a little surprised by the change late last year when all of a sudden Juwan Bushel-Beatty is out of the lineup and Stuber is in. And Stuber, I thought, played pretty well, or at least competently. So if Mayfield can beat him out, I mean, that's, you know, I expect either of those guys to be okay. No, I don't, at the very least.
I'd agree with that. I mean, he was a redshirt freshman last year, and he's a redshirt sophomore this year. So, like, to be able to be out there in some pretty big games and play competently is a good sign for his future. Yeah. And if Mayfield
is
able to, like, skate by him without really much difficulty, then that's a really great sign. And that's like, you're talking about, okay, this could be like the next great Michigan tackle.
Yeah, I don't think that we're talking here about, you know, someone winning that right tackle spot by default. I do think that you're going to see that this is going to be someone elevating their game to win the job. And, you know, you have to kind of read between the lines sometimes with coaches, that although Ed Warner's pretty forthright with the, you know, things that he talks about when he talks about things. But you kind of read between the lines, your body language when you ask a question. So when we had the panel conversation on Monday, and I asked Ed about the offensive line, and then other guys in the offensive coaches were talking about the offensive line. Ed just keeps smiling, keeps nodding his head. He had John Runyon Jr. in the back of the room. He kept pointing to Runyon in the back and, like, you know, thumbs up and smiles and stuff. Ed knew what kind of a project he had on his hands last year and what a different position the line is in this year, where he talks about, you know, four returning guys that were all in some way, shape, or form all Big Ten at some level. So there's a lot of experience coming back. Offensive line returning starts is the first thing I usually look at as to how do I think an offense is going to be. The more starts you have on the offensive line, it doesn't always translate, because you could have a lot of bad players that happen to just be returning as starters on a bad team. But these were all pretty solid performers. And Ed's looking at this line and looking at the guys now pushing behind him. He's got six freshmen that he's not expecting them to play this year, but he's got six freshmen that all came in and looked at Runyon and Bredesen and basically emulated what they're doing. He's like, we have great work ethic amongst our seniors, and that's now being picked up by everybody else on the line. But a year ago, I don't think we would have said anything really all that competent about the offensive line.
Well, no. They oddity, or not so much oddity. The nice thing is that for years now, the offensive line has been thin. I mean,
yeah,
in the sense
and a weakness,
that,
yeah.
Right. I mean, and a weakness truly, and the backups were not there. All of a sudden now you have seemingly a lot of depth or potential depth in the offensive line. I mean, you've got Steve Spinellis, who is probably a competent player.
Yeah, if you told me Steve Spinellis was going to start this year because someone had been abducted by aliens, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
Like, he's been around the system. He's played pretty well when he's gotten in. He's smart.
Yeah.
And so I think you can see that in the redshirt pattern. So Michigan has no redshirts for any of the three guys on their interior offensive line. And that's because they didn't have the option. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this year they're bringing in six guys. And every single one of those guys is going to redshirt, and that's going to be beautiful.
And may still play up to four games where you can squeeze them in some break, because with the new rule, well, not as new anymore, but it allows them to get some experience but also keep the redshirt.
But yeah, but I don't even know if they're going to do that, because they have a solid backup at tackle, whoever that loses that battle. Okay. They're going to want to get that guy time.
Got Spinellis.
They've got Spinellis. You have Chuck Filiaga, and you have Joel Honigford. So those guys, you know, I think you have at least two hits in there. And then if Honigford or Filiaga, you know, pans out, and I think there's a decent chance that one or both will, then you have finally this ability to, like, take some hits on the offensive line, have some people graduate and come through the next year and not have to scramble for backups. And I hope that we're on the verge of kind of this Wisconsin thing where everybody gets a red shirt. Nobody has to play before they're ready, and it's pretty much plug and play. So
this is pretty much a Michigan thing for 20 years.
It wasn't until a decade or so ago, which I was thinking about, and we kind of talked about it briefly this morning. When was the last time, and I'm going to group it in with a returner at starting quarterback that has had success and the amount of experience that Shea had. When was the last time we went into a season and looked at the offensive line and didn't go, oh, man, we've got – a lot of question marks there, and then looked at the quarterback position, which is the second thing that we usually look at as far as how your offense is going to look and how much success they could have, and say, well, I'm pretty confident in that position too, in this case with Shea and the four returners in particular. I mean, when was the last time we could say we had this all kind of lined up?
2011.
Yeah, and 2011,
And even in 2011, you still had a running back at quarterback.
Hey.
And I love Denard, but in the end, Denard can't throw the ball like Shea can.
No.
And
I will not stand for this slander. That is
I love Denard, but he was not a thrower.
Yes, he was. He wasn't an NFL-level thrower, but if you put him in a right offense and made it work, it would have worked.
All right, so that maybe was the problem.
Yeah. Al Borges was having him run waggles.
All right, so maybe that was the problem.
Turn around. Right, he's got six-foot-six guys in his face.
All right, point made. Point made. 2011 and 2000.
Don't get me started.
2011 and 2007, right? But the 2007 line had Jake Long and... Not a whole lot left, but they had. But Chad Henne was obviously the experienced quarterback.
Yeah, but 2007, they had Alex Mitchell quit the team.
Right, the offensive line didn't. They had Jake, but they didn't have much along with them.
And they brought him back. Krause, and then they started him.
Yeah, Krause was solid. Was okay, but it was the other guys that were. They had a few other issues. Yeah, Alex Mitchell story.
There was a lot of drop off towards the end of the car version.
Yes, there's no question. The line and actually that was my point this morning that I said. I was like there was some talent on the 07 line. Obviously Jake was an elite talent, but they were not being coached like this line is being coached now.
Infamous picture from the Ohio State game that year.
I'll tell you, I brought that up. I actually mentioned that picture. Jake had his guy, I think it was Golston, right? Locked up. And then the other four guys were going
everybody had there was a slant on, and Michigan did not pick it up. We'll just say that.
So as we get to the break, and we'll get the calls coming up on the side of the break at 734-998-1050. Offensively speaking, I know, and we haven't talked about running back where there are actual question marks, but even then, I mean, if you're thumbs up and smiles when we're talking about the offense.
Well, I'm not so sure that there's that much of a question with running backs. I mean, we don't have a lot of depth, but. You know, True Wilson is a decent running back who can block, which is a major deal.
Yeah.
And he may not be a breakaway threat, but around the line of scrimmage, he's got pretty good feet and
good vision.
And so I'm a fan of True Wilson, and I love Charbonnet's tape. And Charbonnet, unlike prior top running backs who've come to Michigan, was actually playing against real competition. And so you can tell from the tape that there's something there, and maybe a lot more than something there. And so I think and that's a position you can play quick.
And that was kind of the point I made this morning.
Unlike other positions.
Christian Turner also showed one.
And Jay specifically singled out Christian Turner and said he is the best breakaway back Michigan's had in at least 5 years.
Yeah, that well could be the case. And we haven't seen a lot of him. But
that's his time here, which is why 5 years is his window of time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Honestly, Caron Higdon had quite a...
But breakaway to finish the run and pull the end?
Yeah, he's pretty good at that.
Yeah, but Jay said that Turner's the best that he's had, that we've had since the Harbaugh era has started. That's why the time he was talking about.
Craig mentioned True Wilson's pass blocking, and I think that's going to keep him ahead of the pack for most. Like, those other guys are going to get their carries, but what is this offense? This is an offense with Shea Patterson and three NFL wide receivers and a veteran offensive line with...
Some slot ninjas.
Some slot ninjas. It's all right, we're going to throw the ball. And if there's one guy in the Big Ten I want blocking as a running back, it's Drew Wilson. And, you know, he didn't get a ton of opportunities last year, but when he did get his opportunities to run the ball, he's not, an NFL-level athlete, but he's got quick feet, he's got good vision, and he doesn't screw it up. So if you block him some yards, he's going to get those yards. And that's, not... the thing that you want the most in a running back, but it's not that far down the list. I've been crabbing about Michigan's running backs for a long time, and I didn't crab about Wilson last year.
Well, and I'm looking at Hail to the Victors, a great magazine, incidentally, and it shows that he was 5.9 yards per carry last year.
Yeah,
and that's not bad.
That's not bad.
And it's 63 carries, so the data point isn't that slim.
Those were a little concentrated amongst the weaker
meatballs.
Teams. But just people think about him as a walk-on, and I think it's halfway through the season they're going to think of him like a Glasgow.
Yeah,
where it's like this guy.
Yeah, walk-on is relevant for certain players. You can keep using it. True Wilson, I would refer to as a former walk-on. I think he's actually on scholarship now anyway, but I would refer to him as a former walk-on because he's a starter.
He's a starting running back.
He's a starting running back. And so, I'm pretty excited about the offense. The defense, needless to say, has some more questions. We'll get to that and your phone calls inside of the break. This is the Michigan Insider with the fellows here from the MGO Blog Roundtable on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. Welcome back to the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. Before we dive back into, I guess we're going to dive right back into Michigan football, and we'll see what Don Ann Arbor has to ask. Don Ann Arbor, good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question about defensive line. Over the years, one of the more frustrating things I see is when Michigan puts a lot of pressure on the opposing quarterback around the end, but get no pressure up the middle, and the guy steps up in the pocket, completes a pass. And I think the best defenses I've seen over the years have been those Michigan defenses that has a guy or two in the middle who can consistently collapse the pocket up the middle. Who are going to be the guys that can do that on this team, who are returning? And is it at all reasonable to think that Mozzie Smith might have a role in doing that this year?
Thanks, Don.
That's a good question, and I agree. I mean, Michigan has been fortunate over the past decade to have Mo Hurst, and Ryan Glasgow, and Mike Martin, the three guys who were...
Willie Henry.
They've had really good interior pass rush, and they had none of it last year. And so Indiana, if you go back and watch... Don't do it.
But
if you go back
don't
and watch that Indiana game...
Don't do it.
They just doubled both ends on every play and just singled up the defensive tackles, and it was just like... The defensive tackles couldn't do anything. So how do you fix that? In my opinion, the one guy who's got a real shot at it is Mike Dwumfor. Now, Mike Dwumfor had a foot injury for most of last year. Mm-hmm. He got it in the Maryland game. He kept playing. And he was an awful run defender. So you couldn't put him out there consistently. But when you did get him out there, and it was a pass, he did show that he is an interior pass rusher. So can you get Dwumfor healthy? He missed chunks of the spring. Can he become a guy who's just an average run defender? I don't need him to be good.
Good enough to be out there.
Right. Can he be an every down player who's an average run defender and a very, very good pass rusher? I think that's the big question about the whole defense. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is the overarching question. I mean, first of all, I think it's important to understand that an interior pass rush is not an ordinary thing. It's something, interior pass rushers are rare. And you don't see them on many college teams. You don't see them on even many pro teams, guys who can rush the passer from nose tackle or three tech. And so it's rare. But this is what Don Brown wants to do. There's a great interview with Brown on, I think Brian referenced it on his site, Coach Voss does a podcast with Brown, and Brown said, yeah, he wants to get pressure, he wants to pressure, which I assume means somehow blitzing, firing, or, organically. He wants to get pressure 65-75% of the time, or that he wants that to be the focus of the defense. Well, how do you do that if you don't really have people who can rush from the inside? Does that mean you're always in a situation of having to bring linebacker or a safety, and that poses certain risks?
And last year Michigan had a couple of issues that exacerbated that. So they didn't really have any confidence that they were going to be able to cover slot fades, so they gave up the slants, and then they had their linebackers buzz the slant, so they weren't blitzing the linebackers as much as they were used to, and then you had four-man rushes, and then two of the guys in the four-man rush, you knew every snap could be one-on-one, and that's a bad situation.
So the question is, so Michael Dwumfor is obviously the big name, and I'm glad Don actually asked that question, because that was going to be the starting point of this conversation anyway, but what are the prospects of... Whatever the production-wise, what are the prospects for the three other names that I think get the most attention in the middle, which are Carlo Kemp, Donovan Jeter, and Mozzie Smith? Of course, Mozzie, the early enrolled freshman who apparently is down to about 315, down 30 pounds to 315.
Yeah, I mean, so Jeter looks like a nose tackle, plays like a nose tackle. He could surprise. I think that he's probably going to be developing over the course of this year, and he's going to be a good depth piece, but I don't think he's going to be the solution to that issue. Carlo Kemp, I don't know. I mean, he's been around a while, and he was kind of what he was last year, and that was a piece of a good defense, but I'm not expecting a quantum leap for him.
Well, and Mozzie Smith, we just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, actually, Chris Hinton is also a guy.
Oh, yeah, Chris Hinton.
He'll be a three-tech, probably.
Yeah, I mean, but he's like... And then the other guy I think that we're thinking about on the interior is Quiddy Pay.
And moving him in when, especially in particular, in specific passing downs.
Passing downs, yes. I would not be surprised if he took some snaps as a defensive tackle on standard down. Just because, Don Brown loves him, loves his technique. And if you have great technique, you can battle and maybe compensate for the fact that you're not 300 pounds. I don't think that's going to be ideal, but I don't think the defensive tackle situation is ideal. And so you have Mike Dana, who's, I think, going to be really good. You have Aiden Hutchinson, who I think is, and then you have Pay, who's going to play a lot. And some of that's going to be at defensive end, but I also think that they're going to look at him.
And, of course, some of this just is matchup dependent because you probably won't see that against, say, Army.
Or Wisconsin.
Or Wisconsin when they're trying to batter you, and Army where you need to watch all that triple wingbone option stuff. But which coincidentally are back-to-back games with a bye week in the middle. But against Ohio State, against Penn State, against most teams you play, then, yeah, I would not be surprised at all to see, especially in true passing downs, as you mentioned, they have really high expectations for what Mike Dana can do. We had a really nice conversation with him for the podcast about a month or so ago, and they just love what he brings to the table to add to the defensive end rotation. So if you have three guys that can rush the passer from the end, the logical thing would be to get all three on the field together, especially in passing downs.
Well, and Pay did play defensive tackle on passing downs
correct.
Last year.
Yeah.
So.
And this is heresy, I know.
All right, here we go.
but doesn't this feel like a team that might be better in cover two or cover three? And doesn't this feel like a team that really should be a zone team or a primary zone team as opposed to a primary man blitz team? I mean,
this is a thought that has crossed my mind.
Oh, it has.
It has, yeah.
Because, I mean, that's when I look at it, that's what I can say. Hey, I might just zone, play a little more conservatively this year, and save your blitzing for situational stuff.
It has occurred to me. I mean, the thing that gets you is that you're going to see a lot of Vincent Gray as the third cornerback, and discussion out there that Ambry Thomas might not be ready for the beginning of the season.
Yeah, well, have you talked
right
about
now, right
those
now,
rumors?
Well, right now, Vincent Gray is your number two starting cornerback. Yeah. So, Ambry is working through something, as Jim said, and there's hope that he can be back early. I think that it's more realistic that it would be maybe the Wisconsin game as opposed to the first two games. But if there's a game that you could play with only one corner on the field, that would be the Army game. So
I'm not concerned about that necessarily, but I'm concerned about what happens when you get into the season. You have a team that can get your nickel back on the field, and what happens?
Your nickel right now is Brad Hawkins,
and
Chris Partridge is ecstatic about the progress he's made and his ability to play safety and to cover as the nickel guy.
You know, I think he got kind of a bad rap as a
one play.
Well, it wasn't just one play; it was two plays. He didn't catch up to Isaiah Pacheco, and that's kind of like he's kind of a big back. I hope my safety could catch that guy. But the Notre Dame play was just kind of a fluke thing. He looked pretty functional as a run defender when he got on the field the rest of the season, but also if you're looking at a modern defense and you're looking at a guy who you want to come down over the slot, Brad Hawkins doesn't seem like the guy. And maybe that's just me looking at him and being like, I'm not feeling this.
He's also a guy that up until like 2 years ago didn't play defense.
Right. So that's kind of an uncomfortable situation to be in. And maybe it would work out, but I would like it if he was kind of pushing through some guys. And that doesn't really seem to be the case. So you've got Dax Hill who's going to come in and going to start somewhere. I mean, maybe not right away, but probably
eventually.
Right away.
Yeah.
Probably right.
Well,
away.
Not tomorrow on day one of fall camp, but by game one or game two, pretty likely.
You put me down for Tuesday. So
you don't want to get through one full padded practice before you have a move up.
So it's. I guess it's just like the third guy is going to be either Hawkins or Hill, and then I mean that defensive back class that they took with the Greens in it and Faustin and Miles Sims.
Right now doesn't look very...
I mean, Gray was the last guy they added in that class. They flipped him, I think, from Washington State like late in that cycle, and he's the one guy who's like, I could see the field. I'm uncomfortable with the secondary, and I'm feeling what Craig Ross is putting down.
Wow. So I know Don Brown did say, and he, again, didn't get into specifics, but he did talk about how they spent a lot of time in the offseason with schematic... I don't want to use the word tweaks or changes because I'm not sure what the differences are, but they definitely aren't. You're not going to just see Don Brown's defense from last year is not going to be just repeated out there this year. Part of it is personnel changes, and part of it is that they saw how they got exposed in certain games. And we know that Don Brown, when he has games like that, he ends up not sleeping a whole lot. Yeah. He thinks about those games a lot, like Penn State from a couple of years ago. And so he has spent a lot of time analyzing Indiana and Ohio State and the bowl game for that matter. And there will be differences. Now, in the bowl game, they did go play zone sometimes. Didn't work, but they did go play zone sometimes.
Yeah,
but I think they will practice more zone early in the season this year in fall camp than they have in the past.
That was a bowl game that you pretty much knew as soon the game kicked off that nobody on roster really cared. And
there was one play in that game that sort of killed the game. Remember, that was a close game going into half.
I honestly don't remember a single thing about that game.
Well,
the Christian Turner play when he steps out of bounds, if he doesn't step out of bounds, changes the whole complexion of the early part of the game.
And I think it's like, I don't know if we're ahead or behind by a point or two near half, and the backups for Gary and Bush get hurt on the same play. And so you have your third team defensive end and your third team linebacker playing for the rest of the game. In fact, I think they moved Jordan Glasgow into a linebacker spot.
Jordan Glasgow may be getting some time at your Mike or your Will this
year.
And
that's okay.
No, he's not going to be the Mike. He'll be the Will.
Or the Will. But he can play across the
board.
Well,
he ended up, I believe, playing the Mike in that game. And they ended up with whoever was the backup to the backup of Rashawn Gary. And they both got hurt in the same play near the end of the first half and didn't come back in. So, I mean, that sort of changed things, too.
Yeah, and Craig Ross is the only guy that does not work in Schembechler Hall that remembers the bowl game.
I don't remember. I mean, I'm blocking on this a bit, but I know this happened.
So, Glasgow is going to be an interesting guy, too, because they played a couple of two Viper sets on passing downs.
Oh, yeah, this Ian Boyd thing.
You know, I think that that's a possibility going forward. Like, Big 12 teams are moving towards it in an effort to defend spread offenses. And, like, I mean, you have this guy who's proven himself as a pretty good player. You should try to use him more than you used him last.
Well, and I mean, is a 3-2-2-4, you know, two Vipers on the field, say? I mean, you're sort of forcing the offense into play in a phone booth. You're sort of forcing the offense to say, we're just going to have to blast it.
Yeah.
And that might be okay, because that may play into more of the strength of the interior of the Michigan line anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely a question about how do you deal with your weak spot. But I also think that, unlike last year's defense until Ohio State game, there was no clear weak spot. And
the defense was good for most of
them. There's going to be a couple of issues that's going to prevent this defense from kind of on the same level.
The best help for this defense, though, is going to be that offense being that much more efficient this year and putting more points on the board.
Well, but remember, the sort of anomaly.
Faster.
Yeah, the anomaly.
I'm not talking about being on the sidelines. I'm just talking about putting more points on the board. Chase talked about it.
Yeah,
in,
that's true.
Chase talks about it in Overtime, John Ubaker's new book, where he talked about, you know, previous to last year when they had Shea, and even at times last year because of the offense they were running, the defense felt like they had to be perfect. And we've had this conversation in the past, maybe on the other side, where the offense felt like they needed to be perfect when the defense wasn't very good. And now they're beyond that part of it, and the defense should be aided by the offense just scoring more points. Yeah. That obviously helps your defense. So we're going to take one more break, come back, wrap up this first official MGO Blog Roundtable of the 2019-2020 season here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. All right, guys, we wrap up the MGO Blog Roundtable here on this Thursday edition on August 1st, the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, online at WTK.com. So, Brian, you expect to know anything different when we sit back down at this time next week than you do right now, 1 week of fall camp in the books?
I did put a Tuesday on Dex Hill, so I think we'll know about Dex Hill. That's my assertion.
I assume Tuesday will be the first full padded practice. I think they're going to go tomorrow and Saturday, the helmets. Sunday, Monday, the helmets and shoulder pads. And then Tuesday before an off day on Wednesday.
Go ahead. Tell me something I said was crazy.
That was crazy.
Oh, come on.
But we won't know anything more next Tuesday than we know right now. But we have plenty to talk about, because I've got a ton of notes now.
Oh, I'm sure you do. And I'm not saying we won't have things to talk about. Yeah. I just don't know if we're going to, you know, because, Brian, you get this. You have interactions, you know, and see it on your message boards and whatnot. People are clamoring for fresh info as soon as it can happen. So when the roster comes out, you'll do your roster analysis, which doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's still people will be reading it like crazy. Yeah.
Well, so the thing about practice reports is you got to remember that these are people standing on the sidelines and looking at people, and they don't necessarily know what they're talking about. And then they're like, all right, well, I was here, so I'm going to go talk to this person. And then that person often is just like, okay, this is a game of telephone now. And so it's getting through the spider webs and to the real truth is a very difficult process.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing that, and I like to tell this to people, I had this conversation with Keith from Mr. Spots, because he was at a practice last spring, I think, was it spring ball? might have been last fall, but it was an off season. It was a leading into the season or off season practice, and he said something about, you know, something that he had seen that he, and I'm like, it's interesting because I heard like the opposite from, but in spring ball it's 15 practices. If you went to one, right?
Well, yeah.
There could be, you could have a guy that has 14 great practices and one terrible practice, and you happen to see the terrible practice.
Yeah.
And so you're going to come out and say player X had a terrible, you know, looks terrible, but he could have looked great the other 14 times. So if you, as you get your reports in, as I talk to people, as Sam talks to people, and yeah, you have to figure out how to decipher the code essentially, because you have to see who only sees one practice, which is a sliver, versus who might have more access to see more things to give you more in-depth information. And they, as you said, they have to know what they're watching. If they're running a drill.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that you can't tell. And the best example of this for me was Devin Funches. So they had an open practice that year for some reason. And the 5 minutes in, I was like, this guy. Because he just looks like an alien built to play football. So there are things that you can glean, but you always want to take your practice reports with a grain of salt.
You guys hope for an open practice towards the end of fall camp? Would you like to have a Saturday at the big house?
It depends. Some of the things that they've done in the past have been a little bit mean to people who show up, because it's like, does this have an endpoint? Is this all punting drills? What's going on?
Yeah, Brian and I went to a extended punt. It was a closed slashed open practice that you and I went to, and it was like an hour and 30 minutes of punting.
It was special teams drills, the whole thing.
I was there. I've seen it. I've seen it.
So if we get to see some things, yes. If we don't, then no.
Yeah. I hear you on that. All right, guys, before we wrap it up, Jake, send us home, buddy.
I am pumped up. We are 30 awesome days. I started the countdown at 200, and we're just 30 awesome days. I've been wearing my T-shirt around, flying my tarp leg, and playing the Victors and stuff. One game, one play, one moment at a time. I'll hang up and listen, go blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen, go blue.
Jake, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Thanks to Brian and Craig for coming in. Thanks to Ron Bellamy for talking to us during the recruiting roundup. You can hear that and all the entire show on the WTK.com podcast page. And, of course, the biggest thanks goes to my man Miz on the other side of the glass, who's going to be back with me tomorrow and into next week as well. Sam is out on family time. If and when we have an update on Sam, we'll pass that along to you as well.